Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, going to have a little bit of a blend as far as a roster conversation, one particular position, and try to bring people up to date on Florida State's recruiting board, where it stands and how it may have narrowed and perhaps continue to narrow in the last 24 or 48 hours as prospects begin to make their decision. So always excited to put together one of these, and always appreciate the feedback that we've gotten from people. Had a decent amount of constructive feedback as far as the quality of audio. Know that that is something that we are taking very seriously and are working to address. But as always, want to appreciate or at least want to recognize the people at Louisiana Hot Sauce and note the significant contribution that they make to bringing this product to everyone and allowing us to sit there, have conversations at night, and look at ways that we can really significantly attempt to improve our product. So thank you to them, as always, for the leadership that they provided, and would really strongly encourage anybody or any of our listeners who are on social media, Twitter in particular, to give them a follow. That is LA_hot_sauce. Just search for it in Twitter in general and you will find it. And a follow to their Twitter account is not going to fill your timeline with spam by any means, but it is would be wildly appreciated by us and would be a strong showing of support for the Nolcast. So please do keep that in mind. And with that, Bud, let's go ahead and jump into this discussion.
Let's do that. I appreciate Louisiana Hot Sauce, as always. Ingram, something I think that loyal podcast listeners knew, because we had mentioned it several times. Malik Henry is now off the team at Florida State. He, and we had said, look, he really hadn't been with the team since Thanksgiving, cleaned out his locker. That's a big miss in the quarterback recruiting battle, because I tell you what, he was the most physically talented QB on the roster. But unfortunately, things just didn't work out. You know, had too many personal problems going on, and you know, we did not report that he was kicked off the team or that he was permanently done, because quite frankly, I didn't know. You know, maybe he was going to get some help for some of those personal problems. But even if he had come back, this was basically a wasted year for the former five-star recruit from California, who was at four high schools in 4 years. And look, there's no doubt it's a big-time miss. If you're Florida State, now you only have two returning quarterbacks on your roster, DeAndre Francois and J.J. And so far through his career, you know, J.J. can't play. Francois was pretty promising for a redshirt freshman. I mean, some concerning splits as far as really bad numbers against the good defenses he faced, but you know, still a talented redshirt freshman. And if he can, you know, improve the accuracy stuff, which some people believe he can still be a really good QB. But your QB depth right now is pretty concerning. You have James Blackman and the other kid out of Georgia up your way coming in, or Bailey Hockman, excuse me. It's not a great QB situation right now at Florida State. And so a lot of people have said, you know, why did Jimbo Fisher do this? You know, why did he miss on him? Why would he take him? And we try to have a rule on this podcast, and it's this: first guess, don't second guess, right? Quarterback recruiting, and this is important to understand this timeline, and I know you know this, it starts so early. I mean, we're talking, you get your quarterbacks oftentimes, you know, 18 months, 2 years out, because you want them to help be a recruiter for your class. You want to help them be, you know, the cornerstone, and you want, and quite frankly, they identify it early and they commit early. You don't see a whole lot of late quarterback flips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. They're also probably the easier prospect to evaluate. It's an easier prospect or an easier proposition to evaluate a quarterback as a sophomore in high school than it is, say, somebody that's going to play offensive tackle for you or something like that. So it's a place where you can see kind of whether or not a kid has the raw ingredients necessary to play frequently as early as a freshman or sophomore in high school. And that's you know, a lot of times that's when those kids really tour and hit the camp circuit. And it is absolutely correct, both for reasons of them kind of being bell cow of classes frequently at the quarterback position, but also just because their evaluation process seems to be sped up, particularly compared to other positions.
Yeah, and you just don't see a whole lot of late developing quarterbacks. See a couple, but not a whole lot of them. So, you know, let's flash back to two summers ago when Jimbo Fisher had Malik Henry and Jacob Eason and a number of those other guys in camp and, you know, evaluated them. And look, I was there that day. Malik Henry was the best kid on the field that day. Were there whispers of problems? Yeah, some, but the, you know, a lot of them were sort of attitude whispers, you know, didn't get along with his previous high school coaching staff whispers, not substance abuse whispers, at least not to my knowledge at that time. So, you know, man, if you're a coach in a situation, you got a kid who you think might be the next Jameis in terms of the ability to make those throws and understanding offense. And there's no doubt Henry really sees the field in an elite way. And he likes you. And the question is going to be, you know, maybe helicopter parents and attitude issues. You're taking that all day. I've criticized Jimbo for some recruiting decisions before, but I don't really think that he either knew or, importantly here, I don't think he necessarily should have known back when it was time to pick your kid what he was getting into. I think he's kind of clear on that decision. You know, hell, Eason was cocky as hell as well, people thought. Has worked out a lot better than Malik Henry has, certainly. So let's think about this. When Henry got kicked out of IMG or left, whichever you prefer, at that point, I think there were some concerning whispers. But at that point, man, it's too late. You're not going to go find another elite quarterback. You're not going to flip one at that point. You've had him committed for well over a year. And if you were to somehow just drop him from your class, you know what's going to happen with your other kids committed? They're probably going to look around because that's going to be a weird decision, right? Like, it's really an untenable situation for Fisher at that point.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. It's a tough situation. Nonetheless, you have to be responsible for, you know, who you decide to bring in and how you populate your own roster. I would say that I completely agree with your point as far as the timeline of evaluation and when you decide to, you know, when you decide who you're going to really go after and target on your board. Once the prospect leaves IMG, that is significant, in my opinion, because it's not just the last coaches, it's these coaches as well. And you're starting to see a significant pattern, but you're right. At that point, kind of, you're basically all in at that point. And you've decided to bring this kid in. You've decided to take a chance at the physical talent that you see. And you're going to go ahead and more or less kind of ride with that decision and see how, you know, see how significant of a problem you really have on your hands. So the problem became pretty evident early on, and it was just never going to work out. And as such, he's no longer a member of the team. But I think you can be critical of Fisher as far as how this has turned out and the pieces that he has on his roster at this moment. But it's hard to go back and look at a whole lot of places where things could have gone realistically different.
Right. And look, Henry is super talented. If he had kept his nose clean in Tallahassee and did the things he was supposed to do and not do the things you're not supposed to do, I think we're having a very real conversation. Basically, you know, if he had made proper use of his redshirt freshman year, I think we're having a conversation about him potentially beating out Francois this spring, despite the fact that Francois had a nice redshirt freshman year. I just think he's that much better physically than Francois, but not at, you know, 160 pounds soaking wet, not at alarming weight loss once arriving on campus. And look, Fisher and them tried, they really, they tried to work with him. They tried to, you know, try to get him help for whatever his deal was. And, I mean, you know, he took that extended leave of absence from the team over the summer, and then he was suspended, I guess you can say, early on. But a lot of people think that was to kind of work on some issues he was having. You know, they tried, man, but at some point you can't have that around your program. So
they tried. They definitely tried, and they gave him numerous strikes, numerous chances, whatever, once he got on campus. I mean, this kid had has blown second, third, and fourth chances just in his time in Tallahassee already. So, you know, there's difference. There's some kids who you can tell aren't really plugged in and fully emotionally invested. That's not all that uncommon, particularly for your first year on campus. And then there's other situations where, like, a kid's not coming to a team function with, like, the mental capacity to take part in it and stuff. I mean, that's what you got from Henry far too often, and it just wasn't a guy that was particularly interested in playing football. At least that's what his actions would show you. So he's been dismissed. He'll attend his sixth school in 6 years at some point here, and I wish Malik Henry the best of luck, but from the information that I've seen and everything that I've heard, I would be quite honest. I would be surprised if he got it together and we ever really hear from him making meaningful contributions on the football field.
Yeah, true. You know, hey, though, Josh Hamilton got it together in baseball after
Josh Hamilton.
People thought he
absolutely
was
did.
Totally done.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's I guess it's possible to get out of that. And I genuinely hear Henry was always good to me, and no ill will against him. I really do hope that he gets things turned around and finds success, regardless of where that may be. It may be for the best. Maybe he doesn't play football for a year or something. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's something that we'll continue to watch. And Bud, when you and I talked yesterday about this, we had a very similar conversation to what we just had. We also talked about one of the reasons that it's so hard to change course with who you have committed at quarterback is that these kids, you know, frequently make their decision at the end of their sophomore year, somewhere in their junior year. And it's a real challenge to try to get in on a major talent at this point in the game. Even if you're looking at, say, a 2018 kid, one of the names that had popped up recently in the Florida State discussion is Trevor Lawrence. That is a five-star all-everything 2018 kid out of, I guess you could say the metro Atlanta area, but Cartersville is about 45 minutes north of Atlanta on 75 there. An immense talent that had come down to Georgia and Clemson, and as of last night, committed to Clemson. So don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about a Clemson commit, but do want to just acknowledge what they're doing on the recruiting trail in general. And that kid is a major, major get for them. And to go in and beat out University of Georgia, even with the prospects that they have at quarterback, respectively, that's significant for Clemson, significant for the conference, and significant for Florida State as far as the level of talent that they're going to interact with over the next 3 or 4 years from the school from the upstate of South Carolina.
It absolutely is. Trevor Lawrence, I think, is the best quarterback prospect in the country, regardless of class. So I would take him over all the QBs, I think, in the 2017 class. That's a great get for Clemson. I think they have the best recruiting staff in the conference. I've said previously, and I know people have taken this to message boards and gotten back to the athletic departments. I've got some negative feedback from them about this, but I maintain that Florida State needs another ace on this staff. Tim Brewster cannot be their only ace on the recruiting trail. I said that before. I will say that again. They do. This recruiting staff is merely a good staff. It's not as good as some of the other staffs out there. Now, am I going to ding them for not getting Trevor Lawrence? Absolutely not. They never had a shot at Trevor Lawrence. The thing you referenced to, FSU popping up with Lawrence, I think a lot of that's like message board and social media stuff from fans who are sort of hopeful and saying, okay, well, we just lost Malik Henry. Where do we turn? Oh, let's pull up the recruiting list for 2018. Oh, Trevor Lawrence, number one. No, guys, we try not to lie to you, okay, about recruiting, because we're not trying to sell subscriptions. We'd love if you subscribe to the podcast, but that's not, we don't sell that subscription. We just would like you to hit subscribe so you get it to whatever audio device you might use, like iTunes, SoundCloud, Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play Music, any of those fine podcast apps that we're available on. But man, I can't dang them for getting Lawrence or for not getting Lawrence, but Clemson, this is kind of like when FSU got Jameis, except Lawrence is rated higher and is one of the best quarterback prospects I've ever seen for that age group. So yeah, that's a big time deal for them. And it's a long way from signing day. So I think maybe there's some chance Georgia could flip him. Clemson's got a kid named Hunter Johnson coming in, who's an elite level quarterback himself. You know, maybe if he does really well as a freshman, if he ends up getting a starting job next year, maybe Trevor Lawrence takes a look at that and says, "Do I really want to come in with a guy who's only 1 year ahead of me?" Right? Maybe Georgia makes a little more sense because Eason is going to be 2 years ahead of me. I don't know. That'll be interesting to see how that all works out. But that's a big time get there in the Southeast, and I think we'd be mistaken not to discuss it.
Good call. I know that you mentioned Clemson, obviously, and the staff and the composition of that staff. Decent chance, Bud, that they have I don't want to say a realistic chance, but they're very much in play to perhaps sign three out of the five best kids for the 2018 class. That is something we'll talk about. And look, we don't want to turn this into a Clemson recruiting podcast, but they are with the facilities that they've built and the facilities that they're building. It's obvious that they're all in, pardon the pun there, but they are going to be a force not only in this conference, but regionally as well. And it will be interesting to see what they end up doing and kind of the ramifications of Clemson recruiting at this level, what it is throughout the South. It's if you have Clemson and Georgia both recruiting at a particularly high level, that's not great for Florida State, but it's particularly not great for Florida as far as the impact that it has on their class and the kids and where they can go. So it'll just be something that we continue to talk about, continue to monitor, but have to give them props and the job that they've done and the class that they'll put together this year, but particularly the class that they're starting to cobble together for 2018.
Yeah, they're doing a great job. Look, Florida State is also doing a great job. Somebody asked me why is FSU being out recruited by a huge list of schools, and I don't have it in front of me, and I didn't even take the time to respond. I was just like, man, this is just not a realistic question, because they're not. They're being out recruited by a couple schools, Alabama and Ohio State, no doubt. Georgia this year, but that's, you got the newness and the excitement of the Kirby Smart thing, and that's a very real deal. And I talk about cycles and the need to get a ball rolling in a certain direction and then pivot based on what you're selling, right? And I write about this on SB Nation a lot because I think it's a real deal. And it's why I actually think sometimes coaches are given too long. I think you can identify spots. Like, I would fire Butch Jones yesterday if Tennessee could afford the buyout, right? Initially, you sell what? Excitement of new staff and playing time. Then eventually you have to pivot to show results, and those are wins and NFL results. Florida State has successfully made that pivot. They now sell wins and results because they really can't sell playing time and newness, excitement, you know, because they're not new. That staff's been there for 7 years now. Georgia can sell the newness thing. Michigan can still sell the newness thing with Harbaugh, though they're also having great results. I think Florida State still has a chance to get a top five class this year if they close. But we should probably pivot and talk about sort of a narrowing of the recruiting board. Loyal listeners to the podcast will already know most of these things because we talked about them in the past a little bit. But it's nice because now it looks like we can officially just stop talking about some of these kids altogether.
Definitely. We'll start the conversation with Donovan Peoples-Jones. It's a five-star wide receiver out of the Detroit area. He made his decision as of last night, 8:30, 8 o'clock, somewhere in that area. A lot of rumors that it had come down to 50-50 between Florida State and Michigan. That was ludicrous. People don't, I mean.
Subscription bait.
I'm not going to try to tell you.
That nonsense or just exactly. Stealing?
I'm not going to try to tell you how to spend your money. I'm not going to tell you, you know, what to believe or what to buy into. But There's just a whole lot of fluff and a whole lot of crap in recruiting, particularly as we approach the first Wednesday in February. And every kind of little mini storyline that they can completely get you to buy into and completely get you to look at and spend your time and your money observing, that's a win. And that kid was never 50-50. It was never a coin flip.
It was never 90-10.
Yeah.
He was 100-0 Michigan and had been so for months. And, man, he's a five-star receiver from Detroit. Michigan right. is rolling. Then they have playing time to sell at his position. Come on. Don't be stupid.
I don't know. I'm going to give you an 50-50. Ambiguous update saying it could be 50-50. Talk to sources.
And people from Florida State wouldn't be surprised if,
wouldn't, if he nobody'd came. Be surprised huh? if that were to happen.
Did Jimbo even visit him down
what
the
hell does that mean?
So, you know, people might ask why, and I'm going to write about this today, I think, if I get some time. I got a couple of conference calls I got to get on. But, all right, people would say, why would you keep recruiting this kid if you knew you had no shot to sign him? And the answer a lot of times will depend on what high school he goes to and sort of what trainers and handlers he's connected to. But let's say that Florida State knows they have no real shot at signing Donovan Peoples-Jones, which Florida State's not – they're not idiots, okay? They knew that, in my opinion, just from people I was talking to. Why would you bring him in? Why would you sort of, you know, waste your time recruiting him? And the answer is this. Let's say he goes down and really enjoys the sights and the scenery Tallahassee has to offer, you know? Maybe enjoys the nightlife a little bit, is impressed with the program. He's not going to sign with you, most likely. But, you know, he might go back and tell some of his buddies. Maybe he's got a younger brother. Maybe he's got some friends who are a little bit younger, maybe on his high school team or on his 7-on-7 team. You know, maybe some of the people who accompany him on that visit. Maybe they're really impressed by Florida State. And you know what? That's positive PR. That's advertising you can't buy to get that word of mouth. First person endorsement from a five star. Hey man, that Florida State visit, that was awesome. You need to take that. Dude, that's very valuable. Now, where you get in trouble is if you convince yourself that you actually have a shot at him and you screw up the recruitments of others.
Right.
You know, that to me, we've seen that a couple times, not just with Florida State, but with a lot of different staffs. They stay on a kid they don't really have a shot on to the exclusion of others. But here Florida State has not done that. Right, Florida State is on Tamori and Terry. They're on Henry Ruggs. To some extent, they're on Nico Collins. But again, I think he's going to Michigan as well. So people have asked, you know, why would Florida State recruit him? But they don't. You know, no shot if they keep recruiting him. You know, guys, come on. Let's not trying to sell you anything here. Just trying to speak the truth. Yeah, no shot at Donovan Peoples-Jones. Also, pivot here, Navon Donaldson. The offensive tackle committed to Miami. If you remember, the update we gave you after that was that he enjoyed his visit. But even the recruits who were committed to FSU, we talked to them, and they said, look, he likes FSU, but we just don't see him leaving home. He's from Miami Central, which, yeah, is Dalvin Cook School. He's probably going to start day one at Miami. They have a major lack of tackles. Offensive tackle board narrowing a little bit there with Navon. FSU gave a good run at it, but Miami beat him out. You know, Miami staff is better than it used to be. Now, they're still not an amazing recruiting staff. They're not going to finish higher than Florida State in recruiting unless some really weird stuff happens, which I don't anticipate that it will. So, yeah, other sites, I feel like we're trying to tell people how much of a shot FSU had at it. And, look, I don't blame him for that one because I think Florida State had a better shot at him than they had Peoples-Jones, which I would say they had zero shot. Other two offensive tackles coming off the board this weekend. Isaiah Wilson, your big offensive tackle out of New York, I think is going to pick Michigan over Georgia, although you heard some really positive stuff from Georgia folks because they had the last visit. I think he would start there immediately. And then Walker Little, your tackle out of Texas, who, you know, Florida State was still recruiting him. We've previously told you, just like we did with Wilson, that we didn't think FSU had any shot to sign him, despite the fact that he's Marvin Wilson's teammate. I actually believe he is going to pick Stanford over Texas. Mm-hmm. Now, I talked to his mom this summer, and she told me that they had already taken three visits to Stanford, and that Walker really likes Stanford. So, three visits on your own dime? out to Palo Alto from Houston. Yeah. Not cheap, man. I mean, look, I'm sure the family's pretty well off. They go to Episcopal, but
I was going to say exactly. As somebody who went to private school and grew up with kids who ended up going to Stanford, and who Stanford's done a remarkable job of continuing to recruit the high school that I went to. When you get that education in front of a kid who understands what's being put in front of him and his family is around him, man, we talked about Stanford. Hell, we talked about Stanford with Jameis 7 or 8 years ago. People thought we were, or not 7 or 8 years ago, a while ago, obviously, and people thought we were being crazy. Stanford, if you get in front of the right kid who understands what you're presenting them, Stanford can be as challenging as any school to beat on the recruiting trail, because it's honestly one of the best degrees, one of the best diplomas in the world. And if you can get somebody to conceptualize that and buy into it, it's an argument that no other school can really make.
Exactly. Stanford very rarely loses kids that they have a real good shot at. Now, maybe Texas will pull something there, but Texas is the school in position to maybe beat out Stanford, not FSU. I tell you what, we do not have a pre-write done for Walker Little and Florida State, just as we did not have one done for Donovan Peoples-Jones or Isaiah Wilson, and we did not have one done for an Yvon Donaldson flip. I will tell you that we do have some pre-writes done for Josh Kando, for Cam Akers, for Jerez Parks, all those. That's on Tomahawk. And, you know, we try to pre-write these commit articles so that we don't have to scramble if a kid announces a day early or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it is good to have a little bit of a focus of the recruiting board. We're not going to change much because we have not been focusing on those kids a whole lot. But it'll be interesting to see how some other outlets pivot and start covering that. They're in a tough spot. Subscription business is tough. So some good news for FSU, perhaps, here, is that Tennessee is a dumpster fire right now. And did you read the big Travis Haney article on them?
I did not, but I didn't. I will give you credit on this. This is something that if you're a I don't know necessarily a long time listener, but if you've listened to us throughout the course of the season and the episodes that led into the year where we kind of took a look at recruiting and had a regional recruiting discussion, we talked about Tennessee in particular and the prospects and the promises that they were making to kids about how this was really going to be their year, where they made kind of the transition that you just alluded to 4 or 5 minutes ago, where the newness, the excitement, the building phase of the program was then going to shift into results and tangible victories on the field, up and down season throughout. But by no means did they have the season that they wanted to. By no means did they have the season necessarily that they were telling kids that they were going to have. Situation where you've got a disgruntled fan base, you've got a coach who doesn't have he's not necessarily on the hot seat, but he's not real far from being firmly put on it either. So you've got a lot of instability in general, and it's going to lead to probably a pretty rough ride for Tennessee here in the final 5 weeks of the recruiting season.
They're probably not going to close all that strong. Butch Jones is very lucky in two regards. Number one, he has a $10 million buyout, and Tennessee is not broke, but they're not as flush as you would think they are. They've spent a ton of money on the facilities. Mm-hmm. They were kind of all in with him on the contract deal. And they have an interim AD who apparently is in his corner as well. So I really don't see Tennessee letting their interim AD make a hiring or a firing. How much credit did Butch Jones get, man, for winning those bowl games over those Big Ten teams? The 45-6 over Northwestern last year. It was, 30-point win over Iowa. They finished the year on such a strong note both years. And they showed legitimate progress on the field. They went from, 5 wins to 6 wins to, 8 wins or 9 wins or something like that. But now that's just not enough. And I think that they identified this year as the year it needed to be, and they did not get it done. Ingram, do you know Tennessee's cross-division rivals for next year?
Well, they're always going to take a beating on the 3rd October or Saturday, or the 3rd October.
3rd Saturday in October.
Yes, thank you. Much better put than I was able to do. That is a reference to the Alabama game that they play every year. Honestly, Bud, I don't know who the other one is, but let me take a guess. Is it perhaps LSU or Auburn?
It is LSU.
LSU. Yeah,
not the best group of teams to play from the West if you're trying to have an improved season.
Yeah, have fun with that. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. So they have lost Trey Lawson, defensive end, and Florida State was recruiting him heavily before he committed to Tennessee. Now, he, I think, might be a bit of a backup plan for FSU right now if they happen to miss one of Kendo and Jerez Parks. Kendo deciding at the Under Armour game, and I'm not sure when Parks is deciding, but I know they're in contact with Trey Lawson, and that's potentially a good signing for them. He's sort of one of those three stars that you would feel pretty good about signing. Ingram, it's now time to pay some bills. Thanks to Madison Social of the For the Table group there in Tallahassee. Madison Social, the best spot for some great upscale pub grub and a nice craft beer or cocktail in Tallahassee, right there in College Town in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium. Really just a great partner that we've had now for a couple of years. Look forward to continuing that relationship with them as they open more and more spots. They have Central now that we've got to try recently. They're a great Italian place. That is a really nice Italian meal at a reasonable price. Pretty cool. They have wines on tap there. It's a nice date spot. And then also they have Township, which I know we'll be telling y'all about soon. But they're Matzo and that group and Matt and those guys over there are really kind of taking over the dining scene in the College Town part of Tallahassee there. And that's a good thing because they know how to run a good restaurant and definitely a group that we like to support as they support us. And we know our listenership also supports them. We had a couple of people give us shout outs for the recommendation when they finally got down there to visit and really enjoyed it. And if you're in that group, certainly shout us out, tag us on Twitter along with them. And hey, if you're an advertiser, you like feedback that, hey, stuff's going well. I mean, people are hearing the message. So we appreciate you talking to that. And with that, let's jump back into the second half of this podcast. Ingram, I think it is time now to play a little game that I like to call blind resume SEC recruiting. Okay. And we will, I will give you a couple numbers here with my blue chip percentage, which is basically what percentage of your signees are blue chips. So 4 or 5 stars.
I'm excited to play this game and looking forward to it. Right before we jump into it, Bud, the safety out of Tennessee, what is his name?
Malik Gray.
How much is that kid perhaps going to be involved with Florida State coming down the end here? That's just one more prospect tied to that school that I want to bring up real briefly.
No, I think it's a great point. I'm glad you did. I think Florida State will be heavily involved with him down the stretch, and they want to get him on a visit. I believe they think he's going to visit in January. If he actually does make that visit, then I give Florida State a shot in flipping. If they can't get him down on the visit, then I would say they have no shot in flipping. To me, it's all dependent on that visit at this point.
So if he follows through with a visit, that's something that we'll continue to talk about. A kid that Florida State was heavily in on early in the process, made the decision to stay with the home state school. And if he opens it up and if he's physically in Tallahassee in January, that will be a big step for Florida State. Didn't mean to sidetrack us there. I am excited and also legitimately in the dark as to some of these resumes that we're going to hear as to these SEC powerful recruiting classes that they've put together. And with that, Bud, do not let me keep you from moving forward.
All right. Ingram, over the last 4 years, this team has recruited 23% blue chips. Last year, they actually bumped that up to 27. This year, they are sitting at 20%. I'll give you an extra hint. They are in the West.
20% blue chip hit in the West.
Sounds like some losses, doesn't it?
That is a tough, tough resume. Is this Ole Miss?
No, this is Fat Bielema.
Fat Bielema. I should have gotten that because of the pass percentage. But yeah, that's not that the traction's really not taking place there. That he would have thought. Now, that school's never going to necessarily kill it on the recruiting trail because native state talent available to them. You've got to try to go into Texas and get some kids. You've got to get some kids that maybe Louisiana or LSU wasn't wanting in the northern part of the state, and maybe you jump and get one or two kids out of Florida every year. But that's a tough place, and I probably should have done a better job recognizing that ID. But yeah, that's another SEC West program that is not necessarily fully on track, and is probably going to begin to question where exactly they are with this Bielema project that they've engaged in.
But you know the most important percentage for Bielema, right? That is 100%, as in his contract is 100% guaranteed. So it doesn't really matter. Like, well, he's getting paid either way.
He and his former blackjack wife will be blackjack dealer of a wife will be very, very financially secure, regardless of their recruiting win rate loss or win loss rate or how he fares on the field.
All right. Next, this team, 44% over the last 4 years. Last year, they matched that 44%. So kind of a relatively flat trend there for last year. And this year, 25%.
Okay. This sounds a little bit more like Ole Miss as far as past recruiting success and now a significant drop. Is this program as well? Are they also in the West?
No. They're in East.
Oh, okay. 25%, 44. Are we looking at South Carolina here?
No, this is Tennessee.
Damn.
Tennessee.
I'm faring very poorly here at this blind resume game. Well, yeah, that's quite the drop-off as far as blue chip hit rate and not exactly a class that is surging to the finish line. Obviously, they got the significant offensive tackle prospect that committed to him a week ago or so. If you listen to some people, that would lead you to believe that they're more involved in the Cam Akers sweepstakes than others might believe. I personally will not put a whole lot of concern into whether or not Tennessee is going to sign the Akers prospect. But that's quite a precipitous drop off as far as blue chip hit rate.
All right, one more, I think. Maybe two more, but one more. Last 4 years, 38%. Last year, 58%. So pretty awesome. 2017, 8%.
8%. All right, I'm gonna ride or die with this Ole Miss prediction, and one of these times I'm going to get it right.
Edgar, you have now nailed it.
All right. Yes. Finally. Just
Ole Miss
keep
with
naming
8%.
The same school, and eventually you're going to be right. 8%. That is atrocious.
How do you feel like that will fare in the SEC West?
Yeah, that sounds like perhaps it's a school, Bud, that was recruiting with a style and a boldness and perhaps is not able to go out on the recruiting trail and be quite as vigorous and bold in their recruiting style and strategy that they had been, and perhaps for various reasons. Who knows?
Maybe some clouds over the program.
Maybe some clouds. Maybe the resources aren't quite at their disposal, and have been told not to allocate those resources in a way that they have in the past, simply because they may have one or two more eyeballs on them. Who knows what the exact reasons are? But that is a significant decline from what they've done year over year.
Yeah, 8% is a great way to get fired in the SEC. I know the SEC this year was down, mostly due to quarterback play, I think. It's not going to be down for long. I think they might actually have the best quarterback play in the country next year. So, yeah, 8%, 46th in the nation, behind the likes of like Oregon State, Iowa State, Virginia, Houston, Iowa, Missouri.
Iowa out-recruiting Ole Miss. That's Yeah, that's telling. How does that happen?
That's very curious, man. I don't know. It's tough to figure out sometimes. You know where Florida sits in the SEC?
In the SEC itself, I'm going to go with eighth or ninth.
You nailed it. Ninth, man. Yeah, they're behind right now Mississippi State, South Carolina, Tennessee, Auburn, Texas A&M, LSU, Georgia, and surprisingly here, also behind Alabama. So are the Cleveland Browns. Not true, actually. That is, as an aside, if you ever in an argument with one of your friends about, like, could X NFL team defeat Alabama?
Shut up shop and stop the argument.
Do you know the best response to this? The best players on Alabama will be in the NFL. Every player on the Browns is in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple.
Florida
not recruiting all that well.
Any other blind resumes from the SEC? But, yeah, Florida, it's just never getting the and I think we were pretty accurate in this from a fairly early standpoint. That staff just never really got great traction on the recruiting trail, was never able to really sell the newness, the excitement. It just never really took place for them. And at this point, that's not they can still sell a little bit of that, but that kind of message is worn off and it's not really there. So particularly at quarterback, I mean, when you talk to Florida people, they're just astounded by how poor the quarterback play has been and that they're not really able to get in on one of these major kids or the, obviously we've talked about the Baylor transfer that they lost to Auburn as well, but it's a strange time to be a Florida fan and not be able to find a whole lot of optimism on the recruiting trail either.
No, you know, they had like 6 months of recruiting momentum and then the Greer thing happened. Right. And it just, It looked like the offense was going to be the same thing it was under Muschamp, and Florida State, you know, beat their ass that year and it was done, man. Like,
well, this pattern of kind of stumbling at the end of the year, taking an ass beating from Florida State, coming up here to Atlanta, getting an ass beating from Alabama. It just nulls any kind of momentum, any kind of positive energy that they were able to build up in the process of the middle of the late part of the season. And all of a sudden you're left, you know, losing to your largest in-state rival and then losing to, more times than not, taking a pretty significant ass beating from Alabama in December. And it just effectively halts any kind of real momentum that they're able to get. And I think it's a very detrimental to their closing efforts in the final 2 months of recruiting or so that exist, from that December 1st period on.
I completely agree with you there. I think that, and they're not in on that many elite kids down the stretch who you think they have a real chance to sign. So while they're probably going to fill out their class size wise, I don't know if they're going to be adding to it with elite prospects. I mean, they have six 4 and 5 stars, 8 3 stars right now, which, you know, isn't a great ratio, but it's not terrible. I just don't think as their total numbers increase, I don't think they'll be able to maintain that ratio. By the way, did you happen to see Temple's new head coach?
Who is that, bud? I did not see that.
You really didn't see it? It's Jeff Collins, Florida's defensive coordinator.
Oh, I absolutely saw that. What am I talking about? But yeah, Florida's defensive coordinator. If you've listened to this podcast, that's something that we've talked about. You've done a good job of identifying that there was some conversation out there, perhaps, that he would be looking to leave just because of his own assessment of his roster. He knew the pieces that he had, and more importantly, he knew the pieces that he was not going to have next year. And that's a smart move. I mean, look, this is a profession for those guys. They have to move, have to strike when the iron is hot. This was his jumping off point, and a place that he would rather be evaluated with the talent that he has on the roster now, as opposed to the talent that he would have, or perhaps more appropriately, not have next season moving forward. So, yeah, I don't know why I responded that way. I was familiar with that, and that's something that if you've listened to the Nolcast over the past 6 weeks or so, the idea that Jeff Collins might be leaving would not be completely unfamiliar to you.
So, I mean, I think Jeff Collins was very smart in that he identified the talent exodus that is happening at Florida on that side of the ball. And look, the results are going to be worse. And if that happens, it's probably not a reflection of his coaching ability. But it's hard to sell that to somebody. You know, hey, why am I getting this guy? His defense got worse in year three at Florida instead of getting better. So smart to get out when he did. Florida, again, might lose like 9 of their 11 defensive starters to graduation or the draft. McElwain had better get that offense humming, or that's a team that could lose quite a few games. They open with Michigan next year, by the way. Florida actually is going to leave the state for the first time.
Look at that.
For a non-conference game. First time since what, 1991, I think it is? So, was Tim Tebow even born back then? I guess probably was, but a lot of these recruits weren't. That's kind of embarrassing, but they're going to go out of state and probably lose that. And no word yet on a contract extension for McElwain. Not yet, huh?
Something we'll look at and see how that plays out. But yeah, we are really kind of at this period of time with Florida in particular that getting a good idea as to whether or not that's going to work out. And you're right, all the pressure in the world is going to be for results on the field next year for him, particularly a great leap forward for that offensive unit that's been putrid for many years, not necessarily just his time in Gainesville. So that's we've had the discussion as far as kind of the DNA of programs and what just baseline expectation level is for fan bases. And when you're a Florida fan and you go and, you know, you go to Ben Hill Griffin or you turn on your TV and you're seeing the blue and orange on the field there, just kind of your internal expectation is for, at the very least, you're going to see a talented roster and you're going to see a team that is entertaining to watch and fun to watch on the offensive side of the ball. And my Lord, that has not been the case for 4 or 5 years now. So, we'll watch Florida. Obviously, that probably has as much of an impact on Florida State as any program in the country, as far as how they're doing and how they're able to recruit. And obviously the product that they put on the field becomes a conversation that's pertinent to Florida State with the game at the end of the year. So that is a program that's not able to had all cylinders firing for whatever reason, and something that we'll continue to monitor and watch. But Florida's in a little bit of rough waters right now.
Indeed. Try to think, when should our next episode be? Maybe record Tuesday? There's not a whole lot going on right now. Florida State, Chuba Fisher did announce that Derwin James would miss the bowl game. So that's interesting. It does seem, Ingram, like they are trying to get him a red shirt.
Okay. So, well, that's interesting. I mean, I wouldn't foresee that ever being really used or utilized, but if that's the route they want to go and protect him from, you know, some freak broken arm or broken leg injury or something like that that could cost him another year, then I can see why they would do that. But, you know, this is a discussion we had 3 or 4 episodes ago. That's a timeline that's starting to be a little disturbing to me as far as his return. But, if you're going to hold him out and have him full calendar year to recover from that thing, then by all means. But interesting to see what happens with that, and if they really do pursue a red shirt. Again, I'd be blown away if that was ever actually utilized by James and he was here for enough time to have to fall back on that. But that's something we'll watch and certainly continue to talk about.
Yeah. Meniscus can be weird. Not sounding kind of alarm bells here, but I hope that they're just being I really hope that they're just being cautious. So hopefully they are. He does seem to be running around pretty well, though. Like, I'm going to throw this out there that I think if they if this was the national championship game, do you think Derwin James would be playing?
Yeah, if you're in the playoff and you're looking to play in a semifinal, I think you see number 3 and he's on the field. That's just my opinion.
I think he's been doing some stuff at practice, too, by the way.
Okay.
If you guys are listening still this far in the podcast, I'll drop that little nugget. So, yeah, I think that's probably a wrap.
It's probably a wrap. We'll look to get back together. It'll probably be Tuesday, so in all likelihood, a product that's made available either Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. Want to thank everybody for their continued support of this product. We're able to bring this to you with continuity, even in periods of time when you're not in Florida State's regular schedule or the regular season. Thanks in large part to Louisiana Hot Sauce and the people at Madison Social / For the Table group. And want to encourage anybody that feels comfortable sharing this via whatever form of social media to do that. It's always appreciated, and it's a great way to support the program, and would ask that people continue to engage both Madison Social and Louisiana Hot Sauce on social media, and just note what they're able to do as far as us being able to bring the product to you and your appreciation for that, if that is in fact the way you feel. So until next week, Bud, enjoyed this as always. Thank you for your time. And to the listeners out there, thank you for your continued listenership and support of the Nolcast. Why are you so paranoid? No. Don't be so paranoid. No. Don't be so, baby. Don't worry about it. Hate it. Don't even think about it. You worry about the wrong things, the wrong thing. You worry about the wrong things, the wrong things. You worry about the wrong things, the wrong things. You worry about the wrong things, the wrong things. Tell me right now, you really want to spend your whole life alone? A little time out might do you good, might do what's good for we be done for good. 'Cause I can make it good, I can make it hood, I can make it come, I can make it go.